This is First Up on TSN 1050.
You ain't first, you're last.
All right, so it's been about 8.5 hours since the conclusion of that ridiculous AFC title game between the Chiefs and the Bengals, a game that featured questionable officiating, perhaps even more questionable decision-making, and a Super Bowl matchup that has every football fan salivating. Welcome into First Up. It's Karolnik, it's Koliakovo. Carlo, my heart is still thumping. I don't know what's going on. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great, man. It's Monday morning. Happy Monday to all of our listeners. We are here basically reacting to the weekend that it was. The NFL slate, you know, the Maple Leafs, two games, all the drama that occurred from those two games. John Tavares, game number 1,000. The Raptors, they decided that winning games is a good thing for them. I don't know what's going on over there, but, you know, still fresh in our minds is, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Man,
they make a statement yesterday, and they basically shove it to the Cincinnati mayor.
The Cincinnati mayor.
On Friday.
He's going to get impeached. He is going to get impeached.
He should. You know what? People in Cincinnati should be protesting this morning in front of this guy's office to have him removed from office. Because some of the nonsense this guy was spewing on Friday, I don't get it. Like, I love sports, okay? Pretty sure there's a lot of people that love sports. I never understood why opening up your mouth and saying certain things you do before the game is even played, why people think that's a good idea. And we'll get into the comments that he made on Friday and some of the comments that were made after the game against the Chiefs, and rightfully so. Travis Kelce, he's the GOAT, man.
Travis Kelce, just
hilarious, some of the shots that this guy took back at Cincinnati and everything that was basically said about Kansas City and Burrowhead and the Chiefs and all the gamesmanship that they played with the injuries and Travis Kelce's game time decision with the back. I didn't believe any of that stuff, to be honest with you.
Sadly, I did. I'm like, oh, let's bet a bunch of Travis Kelce unders here. Oh, he's getting injections in his back. Yeah, great call, Aaron.
I thought the Chiefs played this perfectly. Basically welcomed everything that was said about them. Basically threw every bit of information out there to make Cincinnati and everybody else believe that this situation was worse than it was. And the Chiefs did what the Chiefs did all year. They just found ways to prove people wrong and found ways to win football games. You know why, AK? Because it sucks for me to say this, but they are a damn good football team, man. That team,
no kidding, led
by their coaches, led by everybody in their franchise, they just know how to win. They know how to win. They find ways to do it. And again, like, I had no skin in the game yesterday. I just wanted to watch a really good football game. And I thought that we were. But why the hell are we waking up on Monday morning, and I'm looking at Twitter, and the thing, number one thing trending on Twitter is hashtag NFL rigged. Why? You know why people are saying that? It's because here we are again. Instead of talking about a great football game, we're talking about the referees that played a role in that game because of how bad they were in that game.
All right, so before we get into that, let's talk about what happened at the end in case someone missed it, and I'm sure there's a couple people at least who are listening right now are like, what happened to that game, Aaron and Carlo? Here's what happened. So a ridiculous back-and-forth fourth quarter where, I mean, Kansas City punts the ball with a little bit more than two minutes left in the game, which was a very questionable punt. They could have kicked a 56-yard field goal. They could have went for it on 4th and 8. They opt to punt the ball, get it down to the Cincinnati 7-yard line. And that was a decision that a lot of people were questioning. by the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, the punt surrender index, you know, where they talk about cowardly punts on Next Gen Stats, that ranked very high on the cowardly scale. So
okay, but hold on a second. It was fourth and 12. You wanted him to go for
it was fourth and 8 when it was all said and done. And there were a lot of people who believe they should have went for it, considering the circumstances. You got to finish it off. Burrow doesn't get the ball back. And yeah, you basically can end the game in many ways. In any case, so they get the ball, Cincinnati does, and man, the Chiefs defense does what the Chiefs defense did all night. It was Chris Jones with a huge sack. I would argue Chris Jones maybe the MVP of that game, and or Patrick Mahomes, but we'll get to him a little bit later. And ultimately, the Chiefs are able to force a punt by the Cincinnati Bengals. They get the ball back with, I think, a little bit more than 40 seconds left on the clock and a timeout. And, you know, not surprising. I mean, you saw with the 13 seconds last year in the AFC divisional round against the Bills. We've seen it time and time again with the Kansas City Chiefs. They're able to make magic out of very little. Like, well, yes, but this was a little bit different. This was a little bit different where Patrick Mahomes and the very key third down conversion with 17 seconds left, a play that will be discussed in NFL lore for the rest of time. And Patrick Mahomes, we know he's got the messed up ankle. Was it a high ankle sprain? I'm skeptical, to put it mildly.
I told you, man.
Very skeptical. And you mentioned Travis Kelce. Oh, his back is locked up. Come on. The guy looked totally fine to me. And, you know, what, 7 catches for 78 yards.
They played it
touchdown.
Perfect.
Same goes for Mahomes all week. He didn't have a high ankle sprain. He had an ankle sprain. He was hobbled, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this was not the high ankle sprain that is traditionally attributed to any athlete. In any case, 17 seconds left. Mahomes scrambles to his right, gets out of bounds, gets the first down. However, the late hit from Joseph Osai tacks out an extra 15 yards. Was it a questionable late hit? Both feet of Mahomes were out of bounds. He obviously, Mahomes just dives, flails, because that's what everybody does in that situation. Yeah. And he was acting, he embellished, he exaggerated, and he got the extra 15-yard unnecessary roughness penalty, gets it down to about a 45-yard field goal for Harrison Butker, and that's the game. And a lot of people are pointing at Joseph Asai as the GOAT, and I mean, I guess he made a massive mistake.
The GOAT.
In that.
No, he was the sheep.
The sheep,
the
whatever.
Goat.
He's the guy that people were pointing to as the, yeah, definitely not the greatest.
Or the donkey.
The donkey. Maybe the donkey might be the more appropriate one. And Butker hits the 45-yarder. They hit the squib kick on the other side after they make the field goal. And the Chiefs beat the Bengals 23-20. But you're right. The officiating, whether or not that call was actually an unnecessary roughness, I mean, it's open to your own interpretation. But, I mean, he hit him out of bounds. And
okay.
It's Patrick Mahomes. And that was a big mistake from Asai.
In a game like that, in a moment like that, did you feel like the right call was made?
Absolutely. It was unquestionable. Okay. It was a bad decision by Asai.
To me,
no reason to touch him. No reason to touch him.
This is the way I looked at it. To me, I could have, and like I said, I had no skin in the game. I just wanted to watch a good game. I would have been okay if no call was made at all, because here's the thing. If you really evaluate the play, you have Asai running just as fast as Mahomes was, and he used one arm to shove him. One arm, okay? Intentional act to hurt Mahomes. He was basically running at full speed and basically used his left hand to give one last shove. And Mahomes should get an acting job for that, because he did exactly what you're supposed to do as a player in that moment to sell the play to get the call. To me, the referee should have known in that moment that the play should just be allowed. Let the play determine what the play should be, not the referees. And what I mean by that is that it's almost like both referees looked at each other running up to Patrick Mahomes. They're like, okay, we're throwing the flag. It's like, I would have been okay if there was no flag called at all, because it wasn't that egregious. And especially when you watch it on...
But it goes both ways, right? If that play isn't called, we're talking this morning, how is that not a flag?
Well, not really, because if you watch it on instant replay, Patrick Mahomes did sell that. Like, he
totally,
basically
but there was
flopped.
No reason for Osai push Mahomes. It was just
but
stupid.
But here's why
mistake.
I want to go one step further. If you watch that play from when the ball was spiked, okay... In the fourth quarter, it almost looked like the referee was looking to call a play on every play. There was two holding calls on the Kansas City offensive lineman on two of the Cincinnati defensive players that allowed Mahomes to scramble outside the pocket and make that rush. So if you really want to get technical on this play, that run should have never happened because there was two blatant holding calls at the line of scrimmage. Okay, fine. You know what? Didn't call that. You called it. Go back to the kick when Cincinnati punted the ball. There was two blatant block in the backs by the Kansas City Chiefs that allowed Sky Moore to run the ball up to the 50-yard line.
Yeah, so that punt, I mean, you're right about the blocks in the back. I don't think there was just one. I don't know if there was two.
No, there was two.
There was definitely one that was particularly obvious. But the fact that Cincinnati punted the ball right in the middle of the field is a fireable offense for that special teams coordinator.
Well, but here's the thing, AK,
made that decision as well.
You talked about the decision to go not to go for it on 4th and 7 with 40 seconds left. It's the same reason why the punt was punted the way it was. The weather, the cold, and the wind played a factor in both
Definitely.
Of those decisions. Why the Kansas City Chiefs didn't attempt that long field goal, and why the kicker kicked it into the middle of the field, because he was just trying to boot it. Get it as far as possible, because you get it as far as possible, now you're leaving them less time in the middle of the field to try to get it to field goal range. Well, Sky Moore ends up running it to the halfway point of the field, because there was two calls blocking the back that were missed. So and that whole debacle earlier in the fourth quarter about how the Kansas City Chiefs got a free play because the referees forgot
to
blow the whistle.
They got a
mulligan.
On
top of that, they throw a phantom holding call on the defense on the next play. So when I talk about officiating, this is the officiating I'm talking about as a whole, where there was a sequence of plays throughout the whole game that literally sat there, made you sit there and say, what the hell are these guys calling? What are they doing? Just let the players decide the game.
There was a litany of irregular or missed calls, not only throughout the course of the game, seemingly in the fourth quarter alone. And
I know.
Almost difficult to sit there and try to process, okay, this call, the implications of that, the effect on this, the effect on that. Trying to keep track of it was a monumental task. Poor Gene Steratore in the booth last night with Romo and Nance. I felt like his brain was going to melt. He's
right.
The officiating guru, and he's like, listen, guys, I'm not getting paid enough to figure out what the hell's going on in this game. But in any case, the Chiefs do beat the Bengals. They advance to the Super Bowl. They're third in 5 years, third in the last 4 years. And, I mean, what a performance from Patrick Mahomes. We'll get to him on the other side. You got the Andy Reid Bowl, his former team, the Eagles. They beat, forget who they beat, considering what happened to the San Francisco 49ers and their quarterbacking situation in that first game. That was an utter debacle.
They were playing Christian McCaffrey in the fourth quarter at quarterback.
Yeah, it was an embarrassment. That was just a really unfortunate way for the NFC game to go. A brutal game that really doesn't merit much discussion. But as far as the Chiefs go, we'll get to Mahomes. We'll get to Travis Kelce and some of his comments on the other side. And, man, the Super Bowl matchup that Kelce's going head-to-head and arguably the two best teams in the NFL from this season. And, I mean, I just cannot wait for this one. The Eagles and the Chiefs, 2 weeks from now in Arizona. We'll tee that up and look back on a wild weekend in the NFL as First Up continues. It's Monday morning. AK and Coco, you're listening to TSN 1050.
Placement is down. Butker's kick is up. The spinning kick high, floating in the air, and it is good! Good!
You gotta fight for your right to
walk. Yeah, the party continues in Kansas City this morning following a
somewhat check
game.
On Brittany Mahomes and Jackson Mahomes.
Jackson Mahomes, the worst. The literal worst guy on TikTok. that exists. And there's a lot of terrible guys on TikTok. It's Kerolnik and Koliakovo the morning after simply another absolutely absurd game in the NFL between the Chiefs and the Bengals. The Kansas City Chiefs advance to the Super Bowl. They'll play the Philadelphia Eagles. And, I mean, the number of storylines that emerge from that game are countless. And I think probably at the top of the list, beyond the officiating and some of the questionable decisions that were made, has to be what Patrick Mahomes did in that game in spite of, you know, being hampered by the ankle. He was 29 for 43, 326 yards, and two touchdowns. And we'll go back to that scramble that he had to get the first down and that unnecessary roughness penalty with 17 seconds left. Did you know, Coco, on that run, he was running, Mahomes was, 18.3 miles per hour. That is the fastest of any Chiefs ball carrier all night long.
No way.
Patrick Mahomes. 18.3 miles per hour. Nobody was faster as far as ball carriers last night for Kansas City. Mahomes was doing that on a bum ankle. That just goes to show you can really do some superhuman things in difficult circumstances.
I don't know.
I think what Mahomes did
that.
Last night, well, I'm telling you, that's true. So,
well, did you see the way Isaiah Pacheco was running in that game?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I do, but I'm just telling you what the stat is. But
I know. I know you're reading a stat. I don't know if I believe that because there was that one play in the fourth quarter where Isaiah Pacheco caught the ball behind the line of scrimmage, and he literally ran through three guys to get the first down and more. So
that was more a feat of strength than a feat of speed. But
he looks so fast.
Mahomes,
he's got
what
like
Mahomes
the
was able to do on that scramble, 18.1 miles per hour, the fastest top speed by a Chiefs ball carrier in the entire game. I mean, the dude was incredible last night. He really was. And some of those throws
super
he made,
human,
that touchdown
man.
Pass to Marquez Valdes-Scantling was unbelievable. He had just some unbelievable athletic performances. And you obviously saw he wasn't at 100%. We'll see what he looks like in 2 weeks. But, I mean, the number of stats associated with Mahomes' greatness, not only last night, but through his first 5 years in the NFL, dude's one of the best to ever do it already.
Well, look at just the two touchdowns that he threw, right? The one to Kelce was on 4th and 1, and it converted on, what, a 25, 30-yard pass to Kelce? And then the second one, it was to Valdes-Scantling. It was a 3rd and 9 that he converted, and the throw he made to Scantling right through the seam was just, you're there, you're like, holy cow, how does this guy continue to do it when he looked like he was about to get sacked? It was crazy. And I guess this is, you know, this shouldn't come to a surprise for most people that have watched Patrick Mahomes his whole career. And, you know, I think even to people like myself, you know, who basically doubted this guy and wrote him off at the beginning of the year because he lost Tyreek Hill, his best playmaking weapon. It's really amazing what this guy's done all year. I mean, he's going to win the MVP again, and he marched the Kansas City Chiefs to another Super Bowl. And it's just, I think it's a learning lesson to all of us that regardless of what happens with the Chiefs, as long as they have Mahomes there, they are a threat every year he plays. And that's it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that goes without saying. Now, most playoff wins in the first 6 seasons of an NFL career, Mahomes now tied with Tom Brady, which is saying quite something. No surprise there. Those two, as far as the beginning of their career, very similar trajectory. And I think Andy Reid deserves a ton of credit, passing Tom Landry for 2nd on the all-time playoff wins list among coaches with 21 wins. Belichick, number 1, with 31. There'll be a lot of talk about Brady, Belichick, Reed, and Mahomes, and, I mean, rightfully so. Over the last 5 years or so, it's been those two, Mahomes and Reed, who have kind of taken the mantle from Brady
and
Belichick.
3rd Super Bowl in 4 years, buddy.
It's something special, and only Brady has more career playoff games with 300 yards and 2 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. He has 6 of those. Mahomes has 4 times with Rodgers and Manning, and the numbers just speak for themselves. I mean, what this guy has been able to accomplish in that Kansas City Chiefs offense is virtually unparalleled over the last five years, and it was on full display last night once again.
So you mentioned the name Brady, and it got me thinking a lot last night when you watched that NFC Championship game where the Eagles just steamrolled through the San Francisco 49ers, and looky, looky, what are we talking about today? It was a controversial call by the referees, and the referees, the call that they didn't make because of, apparently in the playoffs, you can get assistance from the assistant official upstairs about a certain review call. Devonta Smith, early on in the game, makes an incredible catch, a controversial catch that wasn't the catch, allows the Eagles to convert on fourth down and obviously score on the opening drive of the game. But if the assistant referee would have been able to review the play from up top, the referees could have called that back, huddled up, regardless. Mistake made.
They could have challenged it. They screwed up.
Well, what San Francisco should have done was taken a timeout instead of throwing a challenge. They should have taken a timeout, got a little bit more time. But apparently, there has been discussion about this new rule that the NFL implemented where on plays like that, the NFL assistant official from upstairs can buzz down to the four officials on the field and make the call themselves. Didn't happen on that play. Controversial in the sense that it should have been a fourth down turnover. It would have been San Francisco's ball at midfield at 0-0, and who knows where the game could have went from there. But obviously the big topic in that game is Brock Purdy leaves the game with a UCL elbow injury early in the fourth quarter, and San Fran just couldn't do anything. Josh Johnson comes in, and he looked like a high school quarterback in that game. How this guy got a job in the NFL just is beyond me.
He's a fourth-string quarterback. I don't know what you're expecting.
And so you mentioned Brady, and this is what has been, you know, something I've been thinking about ever since the end of that game, because when Brock Purdy been out and you saw the look on Kyle Shanahan's face where he's basically on the sideline saying, I'm in the NFC Championship game and I'm playing with my fourth string quarterback. What the hell did I do to the football gods to deserve this? And it makes me wonder. And I know Brock Purdy's been an unbelievable story this year, but we know Tom Brady is a guy that probably never gets hurt. He's a guy that plays every week in football, and he's a guy that in that San Francisco offense could have probably led them to a Super Bowl. Does San Fran look at Tom Brady as a legit option next year for 1 year or 2 years to be their quarterback? Because look at the injuries that San Fran has had to deal with the last 2 years. Garoppolo, Trey Lance, now Brock Purdy. Josh Johnson had to leave the game yesterday midway through the fourth quarter. They were playing Christian McCaffrey, a quarterback. Does San Fran look at this team and say, you know what? We can't go through this. We need a guy we can trust at the quarterback position just to stay healthy.
I mean, Brock Purdy, he just got hurt. I mean, his elbow got bent back by Hassan Reddick. I don't think that's an indictment on him or a reason.
I'm not saying it is, but
they should bring in Tom Brady, which is bad luck, a terrible string of luck for San Francisco. I don't see a way in which they would go to a 46-year-old Tom Brady, and I'd be stunned if Brock Purdy wasn't their quarterback next year in maybe some kind of competition with Trey Lance. You know why? Because those two guys make no money combined, and both of whom could very well be better than Tom Brady in that
offense. What if they went to Tom Brady and they said, look, if you want to come home and we want to make this storybook, you need to sign for next to nothing. You don't think Brady would do it?
No, I don't, actually.
This
absolutely
guy's made $1 billion in his career.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think Brady is going to try to get the amount of money that he feels like he's entitled to. But we're just completely speculating here. But, yeah, I mean, that game as a whole, I mean, as soon as Purdy got hurt, as soon as Josh Johnson came in, and Josh Johnson, if you're not aware, guy was drafted in, like, 2007. He's been a journeyman. He's been in the XFL. He's been in the USFL. He's been the backup on a million different teams. I texted Mark Dominic, who's going to join us at 8:30, who actually drafted Josh Johnson. I'm like, how do you think this is going to go? His response, not well.
Wow.
And he was right. Josh Johnson left the game with the concussion, and then you're right, Purdy came back in. And his elbow was done. I mean, the guy's got a serious elbow injury, had no ability to throw the ball, just a couple screen passes. So, yeah, that was done. I mean, San Fran just couldn't execute their offense. And when you have a quarterback who, like, legitimately cannot throw the ball, you have no chance, especially when you're down three scores to a Philadelphia team that looked excellent. I mean, the amount of pressure that they applied on the quarterbacks, regardless of who was back there, I mean, Philly, that's a force. But if you try to draw the parallels between how Kansas City got to the Super Bowl and how Philadelphia got to the Super Bowl, Kansas City beat Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow, the quarterbacks for Jacksonville and Cincinnati. And Philadelphia had to beat Daniel Jones and the corpse of Brock Purdy and Josh Johnson. I mean, talk about favorable draws. I mean, that's not, you know, Philadelphia can only beat who they can play. I mean, that's not a shot at
it's
them,
not
but
their fault.
It's just reality. I mean, what Kansas City's had to go up against versus Philadelphia, it's also a testament to the AFC versus the NFC and just the relative strength and the relative weakness of those two conferences.
But
it also
goes to show the importance of finishing the number one seed, AK. You finish the number one seed, you're supposed to get the most favorable path, right? I mean, it's the same thing that we say about, you know, the NHL or, you know, the same thing I was saying about the Buffalo Bills and the importance of them finishing the number one seed this year and what that could have potentially done for their path. You know, instead of beating two top teams, now you only have to face one top team, and when they get there, you don't know how healthy they're going to be, right? And the credit to the Eagles. The Eagles did exactly what they needed. Remember, down the stretch, they were arresting Jalen Hurts. They had to play him in week 18 to clinch that number one seed. Well, there's benefits now. That's a perfect example of the benefits that you gain when prioritizing the number one seed. Pass created for you, and both teams took advantage of it.
Yeah, and the point spread, some significant line movement in the Super Bowl, opened up with the Chiefs as 2.5-point favorites. I see the Philadelphia Eagles now as 2-point favorites. That line,
I don't know how you feel about that
forward.
Game, but I kind of love the Eagles in that game.
Oh, really? I like the. I already bet. I smashed the Chiefs heavy.
Really
late last night. Yeah. I think the Chiefs are in good shape. But again. We've got 13 more days to break that all down. I think there's a big divide as far as how people perceive these two teams, and it's going to be an absolutely exceptional Super Bowl. We'll welcome in Nick McVicker, who difficult name to say, at 6:28 in the morning. On the other side, we'll discuss some of the big stats from the weekend and the conference title games, and we've got the first up scoreboard where whatever night it was for the Toronto Maple Leafs down at Scotiabank Arena and for John Tavares. More first up here on TSN 1050 after this.
Show me the meaning.
Is this a meaningful stat?
A meaningful, I took it about meaningful, add that word, meaningful.
Or a meaningless number?
Facts are meaningless. You can use facts to prove anything that's even remotely true.
What do you mean?
All right, so many stats for us to parse through following a game played by the Eagles and the Niners that, frankly, was terrible. Let's be honest here. A game that was compromised by injuries to the quarterbacks for San Francisco. The Eagles win 31-7 in an electric AFC title game played at night. We're back on first up. This is meaningful stat or meaningless number. And our man, Nick McVicker, has the stats or the numbers for us to debate. What's going on, Nick?
Oh, not much, boys, but I got a lot of numbers to get to, so let's just jump right into it. You mentioned the injured quarterbacks for the 49ers, AK, but one, Jalen Hurts, is also battling a bit of a nagging injury. The number for him is 175, as Hurts has not even hit the 175 passing yard mark in either of their playoff games so far. Is this a meaningless or meaningful stat or meaningless number heading into the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think it's completely meaningless. I mean, those games were blowouts, both games that the Eagles played. I think it was a 55-point spread as far as the two games combined against the Giants and the San Francisco 49ers. They didn't have to throw the ball downfield, and I think when Jalen Hurts is going to, because they're going to have to throw the ball against the Chiefs. I can guarantee you that. You don't run the ball with Miles Sanders and Boston Scott and beat Kansas City. That's simply not going to happen. So Jalen Hurts is able to ramp it up. We've seen it time and time again this season when he needs to. And I would say that that number, the 175, is an irrelevant number considering the circumstances.
I'm totally with you in agreement on that, AK. It's meaningless just because he didn't have to. I mean, the two games that the Eagles played were both blowout games where they were able to run the ball and they were able to allow their defense to, you know, to make plays. And considering against the Giants where it was their first game after the bye week, and, you know, Jalen Hurts was, people were still wondering what he could do with his arm because of the injury. Well, the running game dominated, so he didn't have to throw the ball. I don't think that's meaningful at all. If the Eagles need to change their game plan against the Chiefs for them to throw the ball, I don't see any issues with Hurts and the offense doing so.
How about this stat? Philly ran for 4 touchdowns yesterday, giving them 39 on the season. That surpasses the 1924 Frankfurt Yellow Jackets for most rush touchdowns in NFL history in a single season, including the playoffs.
Wait a minute.
So they've done something special on the ground. Sanders, obviously Jalen Hurts, I believe, has 15 rushing touchdowns throughout this season. So that's a special thing that they've accomplished as far as punching them in on the ground this year.
So Frankfurt, that's in Germany, right?
Frankfurt, not Frankfurt. I don't know what the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets way back in the day. I think it just illustrates how rare the things that the Eagles have accomplished. Go ahead, Nick.
All right, the next number for the Eagles is 33. The Eagles were only 33% on third downs in the game against the 49ers, going 5 for 15. Is this a meaningful stat or a meaningless number heading into the Super Bowl?
No, I think that's another meaningless number. I mean, they were just running the ball on third and long because the game was done. I mean, it was a game
the whole
in which
second half they were just trying to run the clock.
Yeah, it didn't matter. I think that's one that's meaningless. I'm sure you're in total agreement, Coco. What else you got, Nick?
All right, let's flip over to the Chiefs then, and the Chiefs' number is 42. Because that is the number of rushing yards they had against the Bengals. The Eagles are the number one defense in the league when it comes to yards per game. So, is this a meaningful stat or a meaningless number to put everything on the bum ankle of Mahomes going into the Super Bowl?
Well, I think this is meaningful, and this is why I really like the Eagles in the Super Bowl, is because people just look at that offense on the Eagles and say, they're a great team because of their offense. I don't think their defense gets enough credit for how good they are, not just against the run, but against rushing the passer too. And I think the defense of the Eagles will play a big role in the Super Bowl in helping shut down the Kansas City Chiefs, because we know what the Eagles can do on offense. They'll match the Chiefs on offense, but I think the Eagles will be the difference maker with their defense in that game.
Yeah, if people aren't giving the Philadelphia Eagles enough credit for their defense, I mean, they have not been watching the NFL this year.
Right.
I mean, yesterday they had 11 pressures on 21 dropbacks, did the Eagles on San Francisco. That's a pressure percentage of 52%, the highest in the NFL since 2009. So it says a lot about what they were able to do against Purdy and Josh Johnson. And, I mean, this is a team with 78 sacks this season. That's third most in NFL history, behind the 84 and 85 Bears. I mean, these are legendary teams that the Eagles are encroaching on as far as their ability to rush the quarterback. And, yeah, I think they're going to need to utilize that ground game. The Kansas City Chiefs a little bit better against an Eagles team that, I mean, let's be honest here. This is a very complete team. They were one of, if not the best team in the NFL all season long, were the Philadelphia Eagles. So they're in top. So they're going to need to utilize all aspects of their offense if they want to beat them.
100% agree with both of you guys. Next number is 5. The Chiefs had 5 sacks against a banged-up Bengals O-line, as we are all very much aware. The Eagles O-line is one of the best in the league, but they lost Lane Johnson potentially for the Super Bowl with an injury. So, is this a meaningful stat or a meaningless number?
Well, it's definitely meaningful, because if you didn't watch Chris Jones and the impact that he had in that game yesterday, well, you clearly didn't watch the game with much intent, because that's what he does. I mean, and I'm watching this game, I'm thinking to myself, holy crap, look how many times Kansas City's getting to the quarterback. I'm thinking to myself, what are the Bills doing this week watching these guys get to Joe Burrow, which is what they were supposed to do last week, which even highlights even more how I feel about the Bills coaching staff and why they should make some changes on that coaching staff. Because you watch a team like Kansas City, who pretty much has the same defense as the Bills, minus Chris Jones. They don't have that elite pass rusher because Von Miller was out for the game. But I think to myself, how did the Chiefs execute a game plan to get them to Burrow, but the Bills couldn't do anything in their game last week? So, yes,
yeah, I mean,
meaningful
numbers. It's pretty obvious. And I agree. I agree with you, Coco. It's pretty obvious the Cincinnati offensive line crumbled there. And Joe Burrow under pressure yesterday was terrible. Absolutely terrible. While Mahomes under duress was excellent. That was ultimately the difference in the game. And, yeah, Chris Jones, 8 pressures yesterday. That's the third most ever in an NFL postseason game. So, needless to say, he made some significant a very significant impact in that game, and he's going to be a major storyline heading into the Super Bowl, because oftentimes it is those great pass rushers that can make the impact in playoff games and Super Bowl games. Think what Hassan Reddick did for the Philadelphia Eagles, the way he basically caused the injury to Brock Purdy and fundamentally altered the entire game there. And that was basically it. As soon as that injury happened to Purdy, it was all done for because of Reddick for the Eagles, and Chris Jones did his thing for the Chiefs.
Last night, yesterday in that Eagles-San Fran game, we saw the benefits of being able to live bet during a game, because when Brock Purdy got hurt, there was reports all over Twitter about everybody just smashing Philadelphia live, because obviously they got an advantage on that. And I'd imagine the books didn't do too well in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. The sports books aren't stupid. I think they know they know what's going on as far as Brock Purdy versus Josh Johnson. So it's not like it was open for people just to free for all smashing the Eagles. But yeah, I'm sure there was some live
Josh
wagers
Johnson,
placed on.
It's a 7-point game. You got the ball at the end of the half, and you fumble the.
That fumble was
brutal.
What
are you doing, man? Like, you know, you're in the NFC Championship game. How are you not focused enough to catch the ball that gets hot to you?
Yeah, and even the fumble, you even saw kind of the I don't want to criticize Josh Johnson's commitment to picking up that fumble,
I
mean, you saw Mahomes fumble in the third quarter there, and this guy was going all out trying to battle and get that ball back. Josh Johnson was like, you know, it's all good. No worries.
You're a professional. You come into a game, even I don't care, first string, second string, third string, fourth string. You should know the importance of your job to protect the ball for your team. And you can just see the whole sideline was deflated once Josh Johnson did that. It's like, dude, what are you doing, man? We're trying to make a comeback here, trying to get back into the game for the half, and you fumbled the snap for us? Catch the ball. Ball. Hands. Catch.
Dude, it does suck for San Fran. I mean, the season that they've had, so much bad luck week after week. And for that to happen on the NFC title game with Purdy so early in the game, you kind of feel
just
for the
think
Niners.
About it. You're the San Francisco 49ers. You have one of the best defenses in the league. You have one of the best coaches in the league. And you're playing that game with your fourth string quarterback. Like, come on, man. It's let them catch a break or something.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan's an offensive genius, we know that, but I mean, there's only
you know
so
what
much
I was
one man
too,
one man can scheme.
You know what I was thinking? When Josh Johnson came in and played as horrible as he did, I was thinking to myself, man, could the Niners not have signed like Nathan Rourke, a guy who showed that he could ball out in the CFL, rather than Josh Johnson, who was basically playing football nowhere, to come in as the fourth string guy?
I'm pretty sure Josh Johnson tried out for the Montreal Alouettes like a couple of years ago. Didn't make the team, but yeah, Nathan Rourke probably would have fared a little bit better than Josh Johnson. I mean, how could he not? I mean, the way that he fared, I mean, it was just terrible. It was just terrible. Then he had a concussion, and it was all for naught. We've got the first up scoreboard on the other side. Top of the seven, we'll play the Travis Kelce gold from the post game.
Love that
and
guy.
His media availability. He was unbelievable, not only in the game, but following it. We'll get to that in about 20 minutes. The first up scoreboard coming your way next. All right, so the Super Bowl is set. It'll be the Eagles and the Chiefs from Arizona in 13 days. The Eagles win 31-7 over the Niners. The Chiefs squeak out a win over the Bengals 23-20. But simultaneous to those games were the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Washington Capitals, a rare 5 o'clock Sunday start at Scotiabank Arena. The Leafs just took it to Washington. Nicholas Backstrom scored to make it 1-0 for the Caps, and the Leafs did not look back from there. They went 5-1 on John Tavares night down at the bank. His 1,000th game. Great ceremony before the game, Coco. I mean, that was a treat to watch. Tavares had 2 assists in the win.
Yeah, very fitting. Very fitting night for John Tavares. Congratulations to John celebrating 1,000. Obviously, it's a huge milestone for him, his teammates, his family, everybody involved. And it's nice to see that the Maple Leafs got a win in doing so, too, and celebrating his night. And in the other lone game in the NHL, the Carolina Hurricanes beat the Boston Bruins 4-1 in that game. And looky, 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 AK, the Boston Bruins have a 3-game losing streak. Holy crap! Stop the NHL!
That's something that is very rare. To see Boston lose one game is rare enough. To lose 3 in a row. even more so. It's
first
the Leafs
time
and the
season.
Bruins. It's the Leafs and the Bruins on Wednesday, and you know Toronto, 11 back of Boston, with Boston as a game in hand. So you know, win that game, 4-point swing there, right on Wednesday, and you head into the All-Star break if you're the Leafs, with I don't know a glimmer of hope, a glimmer of hope. I think that's probably the most I'd be willing to say.
We all knew that the Boston Bruins, as great as a season that they were having, we'd be foolish to think that they wouldn't be going through some sort of a slump in a long season like this. Well, they've hit it now, losing three straight games in a row, and Wednesday's game against the Maple Leafs. Could that be four in a row, or could they get back in the win column? So that'll be a big storyline coming into Wednesday and this week. But in tennis, we saw Aryna Sabalenka on the women's side win her first Grand Slam, beating Elena Rybakina in the Aussie Open Final in a thrilling three-set victory. And we saw the GOAT of tennis, Novak Djokovic, beat Stefanos Tsitsipas in a three-set match to win, I believe it was his record-breaking 21st Grand Slam.
I believe 22nd. 22nd
Grand Slam. Wow, unbelievable. Yeah, and what a story that was for him. Considering all the drama and this criticism that he was put through last year with the COVID vaccine, being deported from Australia, not getting the passport, whatever it is, couldn't play in certain other tournaments. Nice to see Novak bouncing back and bouncing back in a winning way.
Yeah, he's tied with Nadal now for the most major titles by a man. His 10th title at the Australian Open. Only Nadal and Margaret Court, the only players of either gender to win 10 or more at a single major. Yeah, so Djokovic was outstanding. I know you were tracking the Dubai Desert Classic, Rory McIlroy going head-to-head. Did that just end like this morning? Like,
it
what
ended
was going
this
on
morning.
Overnight?
So you remember last week we were basically it was Teagate, right? The Patrick Reed Teagate with Rory McIlroy. So that was a big story that we were all introduced to last week. Well, think about how fitting this golf tournament was. Rory McIlroy was tied with Patrick Reed on 18 with Rory on the tee box and to go into a playoff. Rory needed to birdie 18 to win. After Patrick Reed shot a 65 to tie Rory, Rory rolled in a 20-footer for birdie on 18 to win the tournament. Could you imagine if these two guys went into a playoff together after all of the drama that was created between those two?
That would have been just exceptional. Just
unbelievable.
Exceptional theater. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not the case. McIlroy wins, and seemingly he wins almost every single week, wherever he's teeing it up, whether it's on the European Tour, PGA Tour, does not matter. McIlroy, top dog in golf. And our guy Max Homa picks up a win at Torrey as well. I mean, what a performance by him on Saturday. He was exceptional. Sam Ryder, tough finish for him with the joggers and the very poor short game down the stretch. He had a four-shot lead.
Is that allowed in the PGA? Are you allowed to wear joggers now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Can't wear shorts, but you can wear joggers.
So. I don't get it.
Fashion was a big topic of conversation with Sam Ryder. I like joggers. Joggers are cool. But
I love them, too. I'm not denying that. It's just, you know, all the talk about, you know, not being able to wear shorts, but you can wear joggers now, I guess.
Yeah, you can. Apparently you
it's
can.
A new look.
So
it's a new look.
That concludes the First Up scoreboard. We'll get back to the NFL on the other side. We'll look back on a big night for the Toronto Maple Leafs, for John Tavares, and for Morgan Riley as well. He gets off the schneid. Congrats to Morgan Riley. And, man, did he ever need a goal in the worst way. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, at 7:45 as well. Hour 2 of First Up begins after this.